A local lawmaker calls for an investigation into the city's police and fire pension fund. That conversation's just ahead. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, don't miss it, because we'll be joined by State Representative Janet Adkins, the head of the Duval Legislative Delegation. She'll take your calls on pension reform in Jacksonville. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's today's Going Green as we spotlight a unique program on the First Coast, Berry Good Farms, plus a preview of Time Stands Still, the compelling new Iraq war drama debuting this weekend at Theater Jax. All of that ahead. But first this morning, State Representative Janet Adkins of Nassau County is leading a workshop tomorrow on Jacksonville's pension reform efforts. Now, Adkins has asked Governor Scott to investigate the city's police and fire pension fund. Adkins and other officials want to know whether the fund has broken any laws. Thursday's workshop comes just as the pension board and the city council are trying to hammer out a new agreement for police and fire pensions, with changes like reducing annual cost of living increases and deferred retirement benefits. This is a critical problem. Jacksonville's massive unfunded pension liability, which is in the hundreds of millions, is dragging down the city's finances. But at the same time, police and fire representatives argue that their jobs are dangerous and they need to be treated fairly. So there's a lot to discuss. This morning, State Representative Janet Adkins, chair of the Duval Legislative Delegation, is on the line with more about Thursday's workshop and the issue of pension reform. Representative Adkins, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Melissa. It's good to be with you.
And we're already getting your calls right now. What are your questions for State Representative Janet Adkins of Nassau County? She chairs the Duval Legislative Delegation in Tallahassee. She's leading a workshop tomorrow on pension reform in Jacksonville. What are your questions about this? Get on the line, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. You can email and tweet the show. We also welcome your comments on our Facebook page. We're already getting plenty of them. Representative Adkins, in a moment, we'll get into the workshop, which, as I said, tomorrow. But first, you've asked the governor to investigate Jacksonville's police and fire pension fund. What motivated you to make that request?
Well, Melissa, I, like many of the citizens in the Jacksonville area, read the reports in the Florida Times Union that were really quite appalling, that the stories of individuals who were allowed to enter into the drop program that did not meet the criteria laid out by the rules of the plan, or those individuals who are allowed to stay in the drop plan for a longer period of time than what the plan allows for, and all that time drawing over 8% interest. So it's important that these issues be looked into and that public trust be restored.
549-2937 to connect with State Representative Janet Adkins on the issue of pension reform. And as you wait for the governor to get back to you, You're plowing ahead with a workshop tomorrow on the matter of pension reform. What's going to be happening at this event?
Well, when you look at the issue of the pension, you really have three components. You have funding, you have benefits, and then you have the state law. Clearly, the funding and the benefits, that's for the city council and the mayor's office to determine what that looks like. But you also have state law and how that interplays with the local pension plans. My objective in all of this is to make sure that we are able to protect the pensions of the firefighters and the police who are in the system, because quite frankly, when you've got a pension plan that is this unstable, then the retirement of all of these firefighters and police officers who have put their lives on the line is in jeopardy. And so that is the end goal, is to make sure that we've got, number one, public trust restored, and number two, a police and firefighter pension fund that is stable.
And you're saying a state investigation is necessary, in particular, to rebuild public trust in the fund. The executive director, John Keene, quoted as saying he doesn't think any new state laws are needed to solve this problem. What about his comments?
Well, you know, that's one opinion. Certainly, we're going to have individuals at the workshop tomorrow. And we're going to hear from all the stakeholders. We've sent out invitations to all the stakeholders on this issue. We're going to have a representative from the Leroy Collins Institute, from the Florida League of Cities, from Tax Watch. I understand we've got some city council members that will be there tomorrow, the mayor of Atlantic Beach. So we're going to listen, and then we're going to take, you know, that input, and we'll be looking ourselves at Florida Statutes 175, 185, and trying to figure out, okay, what is the framework that would help our municipalities have a stronger pensions for the police and firefighters.
And if you're just joining First Coast Connect right now, our guest on the show is Fernandina Beach State Representative Janet Adkins. Adkins chairs the Duval Legislative Delegation, our lawmakers that go to Tallahassee, and she is holding a workshop tomorrow on the issue of pension reform in Jacksonville. We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Janet Adkins, what's your reaction to today's headline? City Hall or Mayoral Chief of Staff Chris Hand urging the president of the city council, Clay Yarborough, to add the newest version of pension reform last night to the city council meeting agenda. Clay Yarborough declined to do so. The mayor's staff is urging the council to move this forward, hinting that perhaps delaying tactics are going on. What are your thoughts about the politics around that?
Well, you know, it's probably not appropriate for me to comment on the politics of the city council. What I do know is that this is a complicated issue, and it's important, I believe, when you're having changes to the proposal, that the city council members have adequate time to review those changes. Listen, the worst thing I think that we could do is to, you know, make commitments, make decisions in a very quick fashion, and then realize, oh my goodness, I didn't realize that was, you know, on page 58, and I really didn't see this note on page 82. It's my understanding that document was like 90 pages. So it's important that, you know, we trust our elected officials to do their homework, to listen to their constituents, and then to make good decisions. And you've got to have time to make those good decisions.
Lots of calls. Meanwhile, we want to know what you think about the matter of pension reform in Jacksonville. We're going to begin with Susan on the south side. The number to join the show is 549-2937. Hey, Susan, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. I just want to applaud Representative Adkins for taking this up. I think it's a very important issue, and I'm hoping that, you know, the investigation does three things. One is to look back to see whether or not there was any self-dealing, a violation of law, or any conflicts of interest at the time that the pension plan that was talked about in the Florida Times Union article occurred. I also hope that they look at the present situation where the city of Jacksonville is so financially in the hole, possibly, as it's been reported to me, because the city of Jacksonville actually, going back, what, five or six mayors, borrowed money from the pension plan itself. And so why did they borrow it at a certain rate and under what circumstances? And then, of course, going forward to protect the pensions and the interests, you know, and the futures of our law enforcement officers and firefighters. Thank you so much.
That's Susan on the south side. Susan, thanks for that. Representative Adkins, your thoughts?
Well, I think Susan, I thank her for calling in, but I think she's made a good point, and that is when you've got a problem that is this large, it's important to understand that there's probably some mistakes that have been made along the way on all sides. And my objective is not to point fingers, but I do believe we need to pull the covers back and let's understand, you know, the details. I believe a full audit is necessary because when you've got reports that, you know, again and again and again, the rules were not followed, and that's at the on the backs of the taxpayer.
And by rules, you mean the pension fund not following rules?
Yes. Yes, and in terms of people not meeting the eligibility requirements. Well, you have eligibility requirements for a reason, and it's important that you follow those requirements. So that's really the reason for the investigation, so that we can determine were the rules followed or not. It's a simple yes or no.
And will Governor Scott give you a simple yes or no, do you think? Will he authorize an investigation into the city's fund?
We're still waiting to hear from the governor. It's my understanding that they're looking at it. But in the meantime, we are exploring other avenues as to how we can get an audit conducted.
And who would conduct such an audit? You would hire an independent firm to come in and audit these numbers?
We'll be able to announce that probably in about 2 or 3 weeks. But we're looking for other avenues within the state whereby we can get an audit performed.
And if you're just joining the program, our first guest this morning on First Coast Connect is State Representative Janet Adkins of Nassau County. Adkins chairs the Duval Legislative Delegation, the state lawmakers in our area. She'll be leading a workshop tomorrow on pension reform in Jacksonville. And as we continue to take your calls on this topic, what are your questions? 549-2937 is the number to join the show. We'll go to your Facebook and Twitter comments in just a moment. Let's go now to Rick at the beaches this morning. Hey, Rick, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. It seems like the representative is one-sided. In all of this dealing, the final decision laid at the councils and the prior mayors, the pension board could not do anything unless they had their approval and they signed off. Is she plan on looking on at the political side of what deals were cut to get into this problem, both on past mayors? Do there have to be some culpability on past mayors and council? Instead of is this investigation going to look at emails or anything that's been transpired in the past to find out, again, deals were cut? This is not just a one-sided thing, which she appears is looking at one-sided. I put it at the blame of the past mayors and the past council. They had to approve it. Pension and Fire Board couldn't do anything without their approval. Thank you.
That's Rick at the beaches. Janet Adkins, what about that? Is there, beyond the police and fire pension fund, would you agree with his point of view that blame, when it comes to getting into this mess, that blame perhaps should be shared?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Melissa, I'm not really interested in pointing fingers. The current benefits and the current funding issue that is before the City Council right now clearly is a result of a lot of decisions and those taking place probably over the last 30 years. And quite frankly, the benefits and the funding, that's for the City Council to deal with moving forward. The reason for the investigation is to say, okay, based on the rules that were laid out, based on the deals that were made, the votes that were taken, saying this is what the benefits are, once those are defined, then the question is, did the pension board follow that?
And how you said you really want to restore public trust, Janet Adkins. How badly do you believe public trust has been damaged by this whole affair?
I will tell you from the feedback that I have received from constituents, people are upset. People are angry. You have to understand that you've got hardworking families that are just barely able to make ends meet. And when they read of reports of the alleged abuses of people being given deals that are outside of the rules, well, that's upsetting. And people want, when they see, when they feel like something is wrong, then they want to understand, well, is it really wrong? And if it's wrong, let's fix it. So I'm hearing from constituents every day, and some are saying, you know, we just want the truth. We want to know. It's about time somebody pulled the covers back to see what exactly is going on. I've got family members who rely on this pension fund for their retirement. And when you look at the instability of this pension fund, that's a concern. That's a concern from them. It's a concern, I would think, for the current police and firefighters who are working every day, putting their lives on the line and wondering, is this going to be funded when I need it?
There's been strong rhetoric leading up to your workshop. Do you have the concern that there is actual criminality behind some of these issues?
That will be for law enforcement and the state attorney to determine. I can't say whether criminal activity has taken place or not. That will be for them to decide.
And as we speak with State Representative Janet Adkins about the issue of pension reform, we'll go back to your calls in just a moment. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Adkins is leading a workshop on this matter tomorrow. We'll tell you about that in a moment. Let's go now to our Facebook page. Lots of comments for you, Representative Adkins. Here's one. This is not about the pension. This is about delaying the vote on the pension to make sure that it doesn't get done before the mayoral election. What about those comments that we're getting on social media that partisan Democrats see this as a delaying tactic to perhaps deny the mayor a victory on pension reform leading into the mayoral election?
Personally, I find that hard to believe, but I'm not focused on the city council politics. I'm not engaged in that at all. My focus is on the state legislature, and that's where my focus is on the state law and the state legislature.
You feel that the most appropriate venue at this point to look into this is at the state level?
Well, that's the role that I play. I mean, there's basically two issues that I'm focused on. One is this investigation, but two, the workshop tomorrow will focus on state law and how that state law interjects with the pension plans.
And here's another comment, several comments actually coming in on Facebook and Twitter. Jay writes, how is this going to help get a deal done on the pension? That's all that really matters. That's your goal as well, Janet Adkins, to get something done, right?
Well, you could sign an agreement and say you got something done, but at the end of the day, maybe perhaps really didn't. So the devil's always in the details, and I'm not going to comment on the deals that are going back and forth, because that really is not within my purview. Again, as I stated, my focus is on state law, chapters 175 and 185, and then also on making sure that public trust is restored, that these allegations that have been published in the newspaper, are they true, are they not true? Were the rules broken or were they not? And then once that's established, then, you're moving on. The city council simultaneously is working on their deal, on the funding, on the benefits side. So you've got two different, kind of tracks going on simultaneously.
Right. And more comments coming in on our Facebook page. A moment ago, we mentioned the head of the Fire and Pension Fund, John Keene, who has consistently maintained his fund has been above board. We do need to point that out. Here's a comment on Facebook from a listener. Is there any way to take back any of John Keene's exorbitant pension fund? Keene and several others that were mentioned in the investigative report are collecting hefty pensions, and they have repeatedly said everything was done legally. But that is at the heart of the feedback you're getting from your constituents, it seems.
I think, and I don't want to point any fingers at any one individual. That's not my objective. I think that when you begin to engage in the personalities, you lose focus on the policy. And so, we're going to stay focused on the policy of what should state law allow for or not allow for. And so, we're going to approach this from the policy perspective. Is there the ability to go back retroactively? I don't know. Generally, that's a difficult thing to do. But what I can focus on is moving forward in the future. And if we need to set up certain restrictions on what can be done and what cannot be done, that I'm very open to that.
And if you're just joining the program, we're having an in-depth discussion right now with State Representative Janet Adkins as she prepares to lead a workshop tomorrow in the city on the matter of pension reform, how to bring down the city's pension debt. We are taking your calls, and there are plenty of them, at 549-2937. Let's go now to Jacob on the south side. Hi, Jacob. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. First of all, I do want to applaud Janet for this effort and also for not pointing fingers. I think that's definitely the right attitude, because whatever deal does get made to fix this problem, it's going to have to be collaborative. But I was curious, Janet, if you could provide some more information on how someone would actually bring this situation about? I would imagine that when a pension fund gets promised to somebody, there would be certain payments allotted that would be required and certain restrictions preventing people from taking that money out. So how would it be that someone would appropriate these funds and get us to a situation where we are hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, underfunded in a pension?
Jacob, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate that. Janet Atkins.
Well, it's a good question, the technical details of how all this has been able to occur. So according to the reports, you have people that who applied to get into DROC, and you know, the board should be looking at that application, at that paperwork, and determining, does this individual meet all the criteria, yes or no? And if the answer is no, then it should be denied. But according to the reports, that's not what happened, at least in some instances. And so people were allowed to go into the DROP program that did not meet those eligibility requirements. You cannot do that. There are rules for a reason. And then the instance of someone being allowed to stay in the DROP program longer than what the plan allowed for, those are implementation problems. Sure, perhaps we have policy problems where negotiations were made and maybe it wasn't the best deal for the taxpayers. Maybe there's blame to go on everybody's side. But once the deal is made, then you've got rules on how it's going to be implemented, the day-to-day implementation of what's been approved. And that's what's come to light in the recent Times Union articles. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, dollars have been applied to people's retirement accounts that perhaps should not be there. And that's why we need the investigation.
Daryl in St. Augustine. Hey, Daryl, thanks for holding. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, there seems to be the primary problem is a lack of accountability and responsibility. I heard one of your guests a few weeks ago talk about how, you know, here's the problem. It's $100 million underfunded, and, you know, there was, you know, and so we have to fix it and we have to look forward. Well, it's nice that you're now looking back, but I just don't understand how you can not have somebody accountable for this hundreds of millions of dollars being wrong. And in the future agreement, will the people who write this agreement be held accountable 10 years from now? I mean, they could write another program that solves all this problem, and then 10 years from now, oops, we're $100 million down. But me personally, I was part of the writing the program, and I get $100,000 or $400,000 a year. No, the people who write this program today should be the first ones to lose their benefits if the program doesn't work as planned. Accountability.
Daryl, thank you for that. We're getting tweets about that, too. Here's one from a listener. Was the money ever paid back into the pension fund that was taken out by past city councils? And Janet Atkins, I know you don't want to engage in finger pointing and you want to focus on solutions. That said, there is a lot there. The public still, I think it's fair to say, based on the feedback we're getting on this, there is this sense that that people that might have been played a role in getting us into this mess have not really been held accountable, and perhaps it wasn't intentional. But there is frustration out there about that.
Melissa, you can hear the frustration in the voices of your callers, and I've been hearing this for some time now. People are upset, and I think the last caller made an excellent point, and that is, who's providing the oversight of these funds? And we're going to try to find some solutions to that and possibly try to make some changes to state law to ensure that there is oversight of these funds. Because quite frankly, when you're at the point that you realize you've got a shortfall of $100 million, you know, it would have been helpful to know that a little bit sooner.
Let's take one more call. It's Don on the west side, or excuse me, Don in Jacksonville. Hi, Don. How are you today?
Just fine. What this representative, I understand, is from Nassau County. What does she know about Duval County and the policemen here? Well, she could go up to Amelia Island and then do that work. She doesn't do nothing here in Duval County.
All right, Don, thanks for the call. Janet Atkins, you do chair the local legislative delegation. We do need to point that out. You're the leader of all the lawmakers in our area that is the delegation to Tallahassee. But what about his question?
That's a great question. Listen, I grew up in Jacksonville. I was born and raised in Jacksonville. My parents live in Jacksonville. I have aunts and uncles and cousins. I've got lots of family that lives in Jacksonville. But perhaps more important than that is the fact that House District 11, which I represent, is made up of a pretty good portion of Duval County. The district does include Nassau County, but 53% of House District 11 is in Jacksonville, is in the Duval area. It's all of the beaches, Jacksonville Beach, Neptune Beach, Atlantic Beach, Mayport, parts of the north side, including Jacksport and Mayport. So that's why I'm interested. I represent constituents in Duval County. This is an issue that's important to them, and it's an issue that is at the focal. I mean, it's a kitchen table issue. It's important to taxpayers.
One more comment I want to include coming in on our Facebook page from UNF criminologist Mick Hallett. Let's assume that John Keane cut special deals for himself and others. Oversight was so lax and undefined that it was all within the rules. Rules established or not by the city. Whatever amount involved still pales in comparison to the dramatic underfunding of the fund. If the genuine concern is for the well-being of police and firefighters, I'm sorry, but underfunding over many years should be the focus. So lots of feedback this morning on this topic from all over the listening area. So Janet Atkins, can you share with us the details of tomorrow's workshop for people that might want to attend?
Sure, and I understand the comment from the last individual, but the funding component really falls within the purview of the city council. And so that's the reason that's not my focus. My focus is on state law, and that's what we'll look at tomorrow. We have individuals from the Florida League of Cities, from Tax Watch, from the Leroy Collins Institute that will be coming and talking about giving suggestions on what we should do to state law in the area of local pension plans. City Councilman Bill Bishop, City Councilman Bill Gulliford, I understand, will both be there. Carolyn Woods, the mayor of Atlantic Beach, is expected to come and to make remarks, as well as Randy Wise, the president of the Firefighters Association, their union. So again, we're reaching out to all stakeholders. We're not trying to point any fingers about to anyone. I think there's a problem that needs to be solved, and I'm focused on solutions because this is an issue that is important to our taxpayers.
And this is set for tomorrow, 11 a.m. Where is it going to be taking place?
It's going to be at Jacksonville. It's going to be at the City Hall, Jacksonville City Hall, in the Don Davis Room.
Excellent. Well, State Representative Janet Atkins, we appreciate you giving us some time this morning. Thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Have a great day.
We were joined by State Representative Janet Atkins on the line this morning to discuss tomorrow's workshop and the overall issue of pension reform in Jacksonville. Well, later we'll preview the new Iraq war drama, Time Stands Still, debuting this weekend at Theater Jax. But up next, don't miss it, we're going to spotlight a really special program, Berry Good Farms. That's in our Going Green. Don't miss it.
Why do we feel fear?
About a place, or a person,
or a snake?
Oh, they're just slimy and they just sneak up on you.
And what happens when we try to control our fear?
I didn't know how to get out. I didn't know how to get out of this fear.
I'm Lulu Miller.
And I'm Elise Spiegel. And on the next episode of Invisibilia, we ask, can we disappear our fear? Invisibilia from NPR.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
It was an incredible, life-changing amount of money.
The iPhone market is lucrative for hackers.
Let's make clear what the contract is.
You want $350,000.
Hackers chase big payoffs by finding weaknesses in the smartphone software. Planet Money examines the profitable race to jailbreak iPhones today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Spend some time in the Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about the Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Welcome back. Well, the North Florida School of Special Education is growing a great idea here on the First Coast. It's called Berry Good Farms. Now, this unique gardening program harvests everything from kale to collard greens, eggplant, wheatgrass, so many great fruits and vegetables. But just as important, they're planting the seeds of opportunity for intellectually disabled people who take part in the program. And it's all being done with an eye toward sustainability. Ellen Heiser is Director of Transition with Berry Good Farms at the North Florida School of Special Education, and she's here now with today's Going Green. Ellen, good morning.
Good morning.
So great to have you on the program. Berry Good Farms, I just think, is a genius idea. Can you tell us how it all got started?
Well, it started a few years ago with a couple of parents and a couple of local people that were interested in just planting a couple of rows on the school's campus, which happened. And then Tim Armstrong, our farm manager, had a student at the school, his son, and he has his own business, Eat Your Yard Jacks, and was very interested in developing that program.
Mm-hmm. And it grew from there?
Yes, it grew from there. We started with our 200 blueberry bushes, and now we have a packed, about an acre full of garden and greenhouse. And
what all are you growing?
Like you said, lots of different vegetables. We've expanded to many fruit trees, and we have about 10 different kinds of fruit trees. We have the blueberry bushes, blackberry bushes, strawberries. We do aquaponics, tilapia and bream fishing, and hydroponics.
Man, so all kinds of stuff. And so it's a horticulture program, but you're also, the students that take part, you're also helping supply local produce to local restaurants. Is that right?
That's correct. We supply to a couple of different health food stores, a couple restaurants, some different people who are involved in co-ops as far as filling veggie bags. And of course, we sell all of our veggie starts and greens right from our own garden as well.
And this all began at the North Florida School of Special Education, which was formed in the 90s, right, as a way to help intellectually disabled people on the First Coast. This puts such a powerful tool into the hands of your program participants.
Absolutely. It started as just a school for ages 6 through 22. And then the farm was developed to give our transition students, 18 to 22, a chance to work and learn the horticulture practices. And then we added a postgrad program. So now we have about 35 young adults who come and participate in that.
And what do they get out of it? What kind of reactions do you get from them as they work in the dirt and then they see the fruits of their labor, literally?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. It is a really happy place. I mean, the students love to be out there doing things, learning different things, taking part in actually planting, taking care of, harvesting. And then we have a very flourishing culinary department. And so it's a great place to use all of our great greens and
so
vegetables.
You're cooking up some stuff there.
Oh, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
What's on the menu?
Oh, we do all kinds of yummy things. Last week, we did a Thai seafood soup.
Oh, nice.
Which had lots of greens in it. We have a great little Thai garden with limes and ginger and lemongrass.
Sounds delicious.
So they do a lot of cool things.
Now, of course, today is our Going Green segment. Mm-hmm. Not only are you helping intellectually disabled adults, not only are you supplying locally grown produce, this is all based around an emerging 21st century model of sustainability. Mm-hmm, can you explain how that factors into what you do?
Well, the whole thing of teaching the students practices of gardening and horticulture, but making ourselves be self-sustaining, using what we have on the garden in the landscape, and reproducing that. Saving seeds when you harvest tarragon, and then you save the seeds and you dry them, and then you plant them the next planting season, and for just all kinds of different things, and reusing.
Wow! So it's grown literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. What's your vision for the future of Berry Good Farms?
Well, our next big thing is the rollout of our Berry Good Farms on the go. Food truck.
Oh, that's right. You're going to do a food truck.
Yes, and we got all of our funding, and we just dropped the truck off this week to be completely outfitted. We have some wonderful supporters and donations for that, and so about 2 months we'll be rolling that
out. You'll be mm-hmm. out and rolling on the streets, and it'll say Berry Good Farms on the truck.
Yes, ma'am.
What are you going to be mm-hmm. serving? Because I'm going to be looking for you guys.
Okay, definitely. It's going to be delicious wraps and soups, smoothies, muffins, salads, paninis.
Oh, wow.
Good, healthy food.
Now, you know, we have food trucks stop by WJCT sometimes at lunch. Do you think maybe we could persuade Berry Good Farms to roll into our parking
Absolutely.
Lot one of these days?
It's about 6 minutes away, so that would be great.
Yeah. By the way, yeah, let's mention that. For people that might want to pay you a visit mm-hmm. and learn more, let's let everybody know how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. We are at 223 Mill Creek Road. It's in Arlington, just off the corner of Southside and Atlantic. Our phone number is 724-8323. And we are on the campus of the North Florida School of Special Education.
Right. And for parents that might want to enroll their student, mm-hmm. maybe they're hearing about this for the first time right now on the radio.
Yes, absolutely.
Can they give you a call?
Yes, they would call and they would ask for Deb Brains. She is our Director of Programs and Services.
Again, it's the Berry Good Farms at the North Florida School of Special Education, growing great ideas. And great people and great produce on the First Coast. Such a wonderful initiative, and it is our Going Green Spotlight today. Ellen Heiser, Director of Transition with Berry Good Farms. Can't wait to see the food truck. And you know they have that food truck court, too.
Yes,
you
we guys took gonna a be... few of our students yesterday just to check it out.
Yeah, we'll look for you there, too.
Yes, definitely.
So great to see you. Thanks for being
great.
With us.
Thanks for having me.
And we're back in a moment.
This Going Green segment brought to you by Bug Out Service.
On the road or at home, chill out with the Electro Lounge, only on 89.9, Tuesday to Saturday nights.
This is so great. Like, why are we waiting for guys to come to us, Alana?
Did Amelia Earhart wait to be asked to fly around the world? Definitely not.
On the next Fresh Air, Abbi Jacobson and Alana Glazer, the creators and stars of Comedy Central's Broad City. Season 2 is about to begin. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
If the Oscar is the film industry's highest honor, well, then the Golden Raspberry, I don't know.
The way you can tell a Razzie nominee is you're watching it on a plane and you still think about walking out.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the man who started Hollywood's Worst Of award show, next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet...
And who doesn't?
We're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's D-E-E-M-A-B-L-E.com.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Theater Jacksonville is kicking off its first production of 2015 with the Tony-nominated drama Time Stands Still. The show explores the impact of covering the Iraq War on a woman trying to capture the conflict on camera. After narrowly surviving a bomb blast, photojournalist Sarah Goodwin finds herself caught in a tug-of-war between her career on the front lines and the peace of her domestic life with her boyfriend, freelance journalist James Dodd. Theater Jack's executive director, Sarah Boone, is here now with more about this very timely production. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for having me back.
We have been in Iraq now, in Afghanistan, the nation's longest war, hard to believe, over a decade.
It is,
yes. And we still have a presence there. And so the themes in this play will resonate, I think, with a lot of people in the audience.
Well, that's one of the reasons that we, put it on our season this year. We thought that it would fit in. And, we have such a huge military presence here, so it is resonant.
Absolutely. Now, your lead characters aren't soldiers. They're covering the war. Tell us about Sarah Goodwin. That's the star. She's a photojournalist. And frankly, there aren't a lot of female war photographers. So it's kind of an unusual character.
Yes, and she's a star photographer. She's very well known, and she gets very hurt, and she comes back, and she's in recovery. And this story is about the assimilation of her back into normal life. You know, I do that in quotes. We know that for veterans, that they have that issue. So it's about her story and how she survives that.
Integrating back into civilian life can be extremely difficult, whether you're wearing a uniform or whether you're embedded with a regiment as a member of the media.
Exactly. And, you know, when you're used to excitement, coming back to the day-to-day normal things is a little difficult sometimes. And it's a very unique look at that story, I think. And Donald Margulies is one of our leading contemporary playwrights. He wrote Dinner with Friends that won the Pulitzer Prize, so you may know him from that. Uh-huh. But he's so good with contemporary thoughts and feelings, and we're very, very glad to have this on our schedule.
Do we know what inspired him to write this story around the Iraq War?
You know, I don't. I've met him, and I never asked him that question. But it was a big hit in New York, and it started in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. And not only will the play be really great, you're going to have in the lobby of Theater Jacksonville a display of war photographs taken in Iraq over the last decade to give people an idea of what these images, what's being captured by the photographers over there.
Exactly. We're very excited. We have a relationship with Reuters News in New York, and they have allowed us to take 20 photographs, which we're actually installing. I get back to the theater, and we're putting up in the lobby this morning. And they're very vivid, and they reflect what they talk about in the play.
Like what?
Oh, gosh. There are pictures of civilians dealing with the actual violence that were going on, soldiers, American, British, and it covers about a decade.
Yeah. You know, years ago, I remember, this is back in the early 90s, I had the opportunity once to interview Peter Arnett. Do you remember him?
Yes.
You know, famed war correspondent in the first Gulf War.
Right.
Wherever there was a war zone, there was Peter Arnett. And I remember after having the opportunity to talk to him, speaking about it with someone, an older person, in the media, and he's like, "Well, you know, Arnett's what they call a bang bang," and I'm like, "What do you mean a bang bang? You know, oh, he's addicted to war. Like he could never just hang out at home. Mm-hmm. He could never just be a normal person. He's addicted to the adrenaline rush of being in the thick of that combat. He's like, those guys are all bang bangs."
Interesting.
And I'll never forget that. Are the characters in your play like that?
Sarah is a bang bang.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what draws people to that?
That's the question. And you watch this drama unfold with the four people that are in the show. And I'm not sure it gets answered, but you know, it's sort of, you know, what is addiction? You know, people are addicted to different things. And what do you think that your goal in life and your mission in life is? You know, when you are the window to the world, your camera, You are the eyepiece for people who aren't there. And I think she feels very convicted that it's her job to show the world what's going on.
She feels almost like a moral imperative.
Exactly.
And at the same time, when you're covering those, when you're in those conflict zones, theoretically, journalists are supposed to always maintain objectivity. Is that even possible when you're seeing this incredible death and destruction? And the natural human impulse would be to put down the camera and step in and help.
There's a scene in the play where she talks about that. And it's about what is your function? You know, and we all do that in life. What is our function in life? Where do we fit? What is our niche?
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's sometimes it's unresolved.
Right. But so it's fascinating to me to see the productions you pick. Now, let's talk for a little bit and brag about the fact that Theater Jacksonville, which is on the square in San Marco, of course, is the oldest continuously running community theater in Florida.
Right.
That is just amazing.
Yes, it is.
How many years now?
We were founded in 1919, and we've been in our building since 1938 in San Marco.
My goodness. So, gosh, we're 4 years away from your 100-year anniversary. That's going to have to be quite the blowout, isn't it?
Well, let's just say we already have a committee installed working on that. We don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be something.
It's going to be big.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how do you pick the projects?
Well, that's a great question. We're actually in the midst right now of picking our season for next year, for 15-16. Mm-hmm. We read a lot of plays, and we have a representative committee from the community that helps us do. And we try to do eclectic things. You know, everything, all the plays in the season are different, and they have to balance out. Yeah. And we look at, you know, the people who are in town that actually audition for our plays, and we pick things that we feel that we can cast well. And there are lots of things that go into it.
But you want like a mix of serious and light,
yes,
and musicals and dramas and comedies. You
exactly.
try to kind of serve up a nice mix.
Right. You know, you may not like everything in the season, you know, if you're a subscriber, but you're going to get a little bit of, you're going to get a little bit of everything.
Now, I'm sure you have loyal patrons who subscribe and come to every show.
Absolutely.
But of course, you want to get some new people coming in. So for people that have never come to Theater Jack's, you want to put the call out. This is a community treasure, an art and cultural treasure on the First Coast.
Absolutely. Did I say buy tickets? Buy a ticket today.
That's right. The tickets are on sale now at theaterjacks.com. Now, this premieres Friday night?
It does. And, you know, and this particular play, we are directing towards adult audiences. It deals with adult themes and language in it. So if you're 12 years old, you're not our target person for this one.
Right. So this is a date night for adults.
Yes.
Might want to leave the kids at home for this one. But, of course, you'll have other offerings through the season.
We do. The next show is The Miracle Worker about Helen Keller. So there you go.
Oh, really?
Yes. We're very excited. We're actually casting that right now.
How exciting.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is great. I'm so appreciating you coming by today to talk about your new season. Theater Jacksonville is kicking off 2015 with the Tony-nominated drama Time Stands Still, debuting Friday and running through the end of the month, 10 performances. Get your tickets right now at Theater Jacks. That's theaterjacks.com. Sarah Boone, always great to see you. Have fun, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Great for having me.
And that's our program. Thanks so much for listening today. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. This show's producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got feedback or comments about the show, we always want to hear it. Just drop an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Next on Diane Rehm, the UN is pressing Nigerian officials to investigate a possible mass killing by Boko Haram militants. That brutal insurgency and new calls for international intervention. Keep listening. That discussion is coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.